It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hiya.
And Ashley Millman.
Hello.
Do you guys like the old Horizon?
Yes. Hell yes.
The old Zero Dawn. Now, word on the street on the internet superhighway is that a sequel is coming at some point, and it's kind of been talked about in reference to being at the PS5 launch event, which itself might not even be real at this point. Who even knows?
It's coming this year. It's happening at the end of 2020.
Is
like
it,
getting
though?
Horizon Zero Dawn 2 as a launch game. I'm going to bet this kind of Dr. Pepper I'm drinking right now on it.
I mean, you can. I mean, it's meant to be like, look, what do you call it? Shown on 5th of February, then that got delayed until the end of the month. And then I don't even know anymore. But point being that we've all played Horizon. We all loved it very, very much. Ash just finished it the other week.
I did a little while ago now. But yeah, did all of the whole main game, did all the DLC, got my little platinum, did all the like finishing all of the trophies. Mm. I had a great time. I loved it. I was like, I'm going to rinse this game for all it's worth.
We thought we'd do another in our long running series, which doesn't have a name, of games that we like to talk about the sequels for, rolls off the tongue. We did one for God of War. We did one for Last of Us too. Go back through the archives for them.
Wonder why that hasn't taken off.
You know? I know. If you sort of acronymed it, it might be way better.
Maybe.
But not to worry. So yeah, we're going to talk about Horizon Zero Dawn, things that we want to see in the next game, because there's nothing else out there for it other than the one of the CVs for someone who worked at Guerrilla said they were working on Foliage. So assuming there's some lovely foliage coming. But
doesn't sound like Horizon to me.
Sounds
wild.
I want to see some more robots, but I thought we'd just talk about everything. Now, I haven't played it since 2017. I shall be better with the plot stuff than moi. But I thought we'd go over like plot stuff. Basically, what do you guys want to see going forward? Because for me, it seems like such a complete story.
Well, like as a refresher for the first game, the first one you play as Aloy, you go through, you're in this world where there's robots, where there's people, and it's kind of like the time machine when you've gone so far forward in time that everything has kind of restarted again, like you're with tribes, but there's also machines that are kind of like animals running through the landscape, and you've got to understand where you came from and why and your importance to the world you're in as Aloy. So it turns out, spoilers, obviously.
Oh yeah, full spoilers.
What?
Aloy is a clone of a scientist called Elizabeth Sobeck.
Yes.
And there was this massive robotic plague that took over loads of military robots in the past that turned them into world-destroying machines that they couldn't stop, basically. Elizabeth Sobeck and Ted Farrow tried their best to stop this thing that happened where all the robots started eating biomass and killing everyone, and basically we're going to ravage the earth in 15 months with Operation Enduring Victory, which was fighting back against the robots, but that wasn't going to work. So they set up Project Horizon Zero Dawn instead, where they trapped loads of the smartest minds underground and said, right, what can we do to stop this? And they made a terraforming system called Gaia, who is this big composite AI who is included with loads of other little separate ones that all come together. And made all the programming for her whilst they were alive in this bunker. And then basically humanity kind of just died out for a bit whilst they had all of their embryos stored. The Farrow plague with all the robots destroyed the earth and then went into basically hibernation. Mm-hmm. And Gaia kicked in, took over, terraformed the world, brought back humanity. And then a problem occurs.
You're almost there.
Which means that Aloy is born, the clone of Elizabeth Sobeck, to fix Gaia and stop the world being redestroyed again by the reincarnation of the Pharaoh Plague, which is housed in Hades.
Yes, Hades is one of the... So the way that the system's supposed to work, from what I remember, was that they have this thing, this Gaia-like program, which is, like you said, is made up of various different AIs. One of them is Hades. And the whole point of Hades is to essentially wipe out the Earth over and over again, so that like Gaia reforms, that everything comes back, and it's just a cycle that continues until the perfect version of Earth is around. Mm-hmm. So like you're sort of dropping in, you know, seeing that kind of stuff at work, and to try and stop Hades. And at the very end of the game, Hades, the AI, which randomly takes flight and sort of flies around.
Yeah.
I don't know how, nanomachine cloud, I guess, or something, ends up with a character called Silence, who is someone who like is like an older scientist or something, and he knows...
He's a Banuk shaman.
Yes, okay, so he knows the history of the world and what's going on, and he's the last character to... He houses Hades in this sort of canister thing, and every other question about the game is answered, but the very end sees him walk away with Hades.
Yeah.
So I guess it's like, what do you guys want to see from there?
Yeah, because Silence is, he initially was like the leader of the sort of cult tribe, wasn't he at the beginning? He was tempted by Hades for a little bit, so we don't really know what's going on at the end, I think. It's weird because Horizon, like you said, Scott, it feels like a complete package. Like, I remember when I was playing through it and they revealed so much, and I thought that was great at the time, but then it did leave me thinking, where are they going to go with this in the future? And I do like that they've got so many, you know, it's a complete story, and yet the world is so ripe for exploration.
What do you think? No, I totally do. But I just, for me, like I said, the first one is so satisfying. And like, yeah, I was quite like surprised the first time through on how much they answered. They wrap every single thing up. And I think that, is the Silence cutscene a post-credits thing?
It's after you've defeated Hades.
Yeah.
I think it is post-credits. There's a bit, because you go through all of the things that he's like, oh, we've got lots to talk about, to his little box of Hades. So that's obviously the thread that they're leaving open, to have him as a big bad of the next series, or the man who is desperate for knowledge that's going to unearth some ancient technology that then threatens the world again. It is not going to be good if they do that, I don't think. I don't want to see that again.
No.
They can do so. That's the thing. It's like, what do they do that sort of poses this? Because for me, one of the biggest appeals to Horizon, the reason I love it so much, is all the philosophical stuff and the idea that like an AI can govern humanity better than, like, you know, it knows us better than ourselves, kind of stuff like that. Which is something that Metal Gear Peace Walker did, like the idea that only a machine could ever really push the nuclear button because it would have to analyze whether or not a nuclear missile could ever be fired. Now, I love those questions of taking humanity out of it. And I kind of wonder what they can do with like what Silence represents and using Hades as this extinction program going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I love the idea that obviously by the end of Horizon, more people know what actually happened with the history and stuff. The questions I want to see raised, and you don't even have to answer them, you just have to explore them in the sequel, is what happens once that knowledge is gained? Does that impact the way these, you know, cultures develop? Is there a issue with taking that past knowledge and like taking it forward? Or I don't know, it's like that sort of thing of, would you kind of delete this history and have a clean break, or would you want to use the mistakes of the past to inform the present? I just think that's quite fascinating, and that's where I wanted to see it go, because as much as I enjoyed the first one, and this is a question I want to ask you two, is I don't really want to see too much jumping back into the past going into the second game. I felt like we got a lot of that in the first game, and it was awesome to establish the backstory and the context, but for me, I want to know what's happening in like the present. I want to know how this civilization is going to move forward and either use what the past has informed, but not necessarily, you know, jump in via flashbacks or anything like that, as far as fascinating as it is.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if they keep, because I loved all the underground tomb stuff. It was like all those like cybernetic, like weird, like the manufacturing plants and how the machines were sort of like self-replicating and stuff. But because that's been answered, I kind of wonder what you do with that. And, you know, is Silence the main villain? Yeah. Is he trying to use them for something?
Well, like the DLC did a bit where it was like the machines evolving, like with a different program, I can't remember how to pronounce it, like Hephaestus?
Oh, is it Hephaestus, like the old Greek thing?
Yeah.
Let's go with that. I'm probably still wrong, but you never know.
He basically is making like demonic versions of the machines, where he's upgrading them to the point where they can be super all-annihilating. But I think what I would most want to see in a sequel is basically them rebuilding Gaia and going to the Apollo program and figuring out all that stuff. So obviously she's built up with all the different pods of AI. I'd like to see Aloy kind of going to find the housing of each of those and bringing them together to help like with that sort of thing. I think it'd be really interesting to watch it all get put back together to make the perfect Earth for what they've got at the moment. Because then you can have like civil war with the Apollo program, which is all of the knowledge that humankind has, whether people accept it. You'll probably have Banuk people living on the edges who are like, no, well, we praise this. We live in the mountains. We don't want this. So you can have the religious aspect. Even if they go south, like out of the Sunlands with the Sunlands with the Carja, and into, I think they mentioned Reavers and stuff and other clans that live in the south. Like, it's a real offhand comment they make about it. I'd like to see more kind of other lands and how they're dealing with it, because the Faroe Plague was worldwide, whereas we stick to a very specific area of America. I think it's Nebraska, maybe.
Oh God, I remember when I first went through that game, because you get some map coordinates at one point, and I remember punching them in, and it was in like Las Vegas. It was like some strip like, that was next to Las Vegas.
It's like the Hoover Dam in the DLC as well.
Might be the damn thing as well. I guess there'll be like a way for them to explore. If the crux of that franchise, one of the core questions, is that idea of like whether an AI knows what's best for humanity than humans themselves, I guess that's a way to do that. But do you think that's something you'd want to see as well?
Probably, yeah. I think it's a cool idea to see, you know, I want to see like a new map. I want to see like a new area. But I think it would be interesting to see how people, because if I recall, I was brushing up on the plot. Mm-hmm. Isn't there a thing where the program initially was going to clone humans as they were before, you know, the extinction event? They weren't supposed to be in like these tribes. That was like a malfunction.
I've mentioned this so much, but like that's like the crux of the reason that I really fell in love with Horizon is like, that's one of the crux questions that Ted Farrow asks of all. Well, he forces through with all the scientists where he deletes all the human knowledge so that everyone's forced to regress and start over again, because he thinks that by providing something like, you know, the plans for a nuclear bomb, they'll just go out and make one.
Yes.
And I love that as a comment on human nature.
That's kind of, I'm throwing this around in my head because I don't know if I want to see it, but I do think it would be an interesting avenue to take. If you do see certain tribes like sort of embrace that technology, maybe they start rebuilding old structures, like rebuilding the skyscrapers and kind of living in something that's a facsimile of what the old world used to be, whereas you have the people who outright reject it and say, like, we don't need that. I want to see those kind of clashes of cultures and those, how technology, you know, either manipulates or benefits, those people.
It would be like a Western is the thing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I think what would be really interesting is if they looked at people. There was obviously that piece where you're in the goddess temple, the big metal door that you go into, where there's a bunch of children that are trapped in there their whole life because the door doesn't open for them to get out.
Yeah.
So if you could have like people who've been cloned or woken up, or the embryos or whatever, that are trapped underground and then make it to the surface. Like maybe they've woken up really late, the same as Aloy, and they're a new clan or a new tribe of people that get introduced to the world as it is and have to figure out what's going on there, as you play as one of those people instead of as Aloy. I'd like to play as Aloy, but you could go.
We can go into character. Yeah. I've got down, like, do we need to switch protagonists? We'll do that in like a little sec. But I love the idea because they spell out that the machines replicate at such a crazy fast rate that they've kind of like, they have set up that these machines, the systems that create the machines work at such a crazy production rate. Like, it kind of reminds me of Death Stranding, where it's like, here's an immediate motorway because we need to make it work kind of thing. Even though in that game, Kojima does explain how that stuff works, and it is based on like current science technology about, I don't know, using some weird plant-based algorithm to sort of guess how a machine would come together and then just expedite in the whole process.
Just 3D printing it.
3D printing it. It's just, the bridge. You know, it's a way to sort of make bridges in like a second. But I like the idea of using that and putting that into, tribal humanity or whatever, or mankind or something, and seeing what they would do. Like you said, someone just builds a skyscraper in like a couple of months, and then like, do people sort of like push back against that? What if like something adjacent to the internet appears and people push back against that? Just if they all end up on like the primitive version of Twitter, and it's exactly the same, then that's the point I'm making. I don't know, but they do something like that.
I'd quite like to see that, because I think even in Horizon, the first one, when you see Aloy especially start to use all of the older, but what we would class as modern tech, like, it just creates a cool friction, I think, between, you know, what those people know and like what you can get out of it. And I do like the blend of sci-fi and sort of, what do we even call it? Fantasy, I suppose, just regular fantasy it uses. And I do want to see more of that. I want to see them get a bit more experimental, a bit wacky, with especially like the designs. I was saying to you guys before this, and I haven't played the DLC, so I don't know how the robots and stuff mutate and that, but I want to see just something go wrong with it with like the production, and I want to see like these crazy hybrids going forward. Like I mentioned the crow dog thing from Bloodborne that yells at you.
Oh God,
I want to see a robot version of that flap at you, and I would poo.
That's one of the best jump scares in gaming, is the first time you come, because it just looks like a bird on the floor, should be fine, and then it barks like a dog, and it's the worst thing ever. Yeah, I mean, they could go down that route. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, how much do they explore that idea that the AI is perfect the whole way through and that humanity knows better, and maybe humanity's tampering and it results in these hybrids?
Well, you could go full, like, upgrade the movie and make
make
everyone stick AI in themselves and be like weird cybernetic zombies, and then you could have a zombie game for Horizon, which would be a really weird way of doing it. But I think the evolution of of, like Josh is saying, flesh and science into one morbid like encasement would be interesting.
I am so for cyberpunkian transhumanism. This meat bag that we call a body.
Thank you. It's much
leave
better
it behind.
The flesh and the science.
The flesh of the enemy.
The flesh of fallen angels. I would get rid of all that stuff and give me like cool little like metal legs and cool stuff like that. Maybe make it. I don't know. There's so much cool stuff you could do with that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Speaking of character stuff, do you think there's more that you do? You just stick with Aloy because they've done such a great job at establishing her, or based on where she's at the end, like her arc is pretty much done. Mm. Would you change the character? Like, would you want to go back to Aloy? I'd be up for a new character or create your own character.
Aloy is such a headstrong, like, she is her character. Mm-hmm. She knows what she wants. She's very determined. She is what she is made to be, basically. Yeah. And when she throws her spear away at the end, obviously she leaves it in Hades, and then people go up and try and touch it and like, ooh, look at this spear. I'm going to grab it. Uh-huh. I think that's definitely her kind of resigning herself to learning about her past. But I also think she's absolutely the person that would take on the mantle and be like, right, I'm going to save the world again. Like, get out of the way, guys. Let's deal with it. Because she is Elizabeth Sobeck, who was the absolute OG of the old world. Yeah. So like for that to continue, I think would be what's right, but I also would prefer a new character. I don't know. I think I'd like to see Aloy again in a new situation, but I think the option to play another character, even if it's one that shifts halfway through, you play someone new and then Aloy comes back and then you can play her.
I would love if they had Metal Gear 2 or Assassin's Creed 2 did it, where they mythologize her by letting you play as someone else and you build up to meeting them again. Like I remember that bit in Assassin's Creed 2 where you hear about Altair and you don't even see him, I don't think, in 2. You get diary entries and he's been up to this for the last couple of thousand years. Like, yeah, maybe they jump way far in the future and it's all the ramifications of what was left behind. What do you think in characters?
I'd quite like to see that, actually. I would take either. I do really like Aloy, and I think that you could, exactly what Ash said, like, just pick back up with her because she is like this headstrong character, and I would like to see her sort of try to strive for her own identity, because that's kind of what she's doing in the first game, but obviously everyone's sort of treating her as this kind of, well, at first an outcast and then this kind of weird messiah figure. So I want to see her sort of embrace her own identity, but at the same time the idea of jumping into the future I think works from a narrative standpoint as well, because it gives you, like you said, the first game kind of wrapped up most of the storylines, and if you jump forward and you see how the world's changed in the wake of that and then you do see Aloy from, you know, a different perspective as this figure, I think that would be kind of cool. Someone who perhaps has grown up like in the wake of the events of the first game and it has become mythologized in that way. I think that would be quite a cool standpoint as well.
I guess if you do that, you've kind of got to like do away with Silence, but then it means that you don't have as much of an expected villain. Like, I kind of wonder what you do for villainry in this, because like Horizon hasn't got like a main villain. It's more that you're trying to find out what happened in the past, and then like, you know, sort of,
well, Hades is the main villain.
I guess so. He becomes like the final boss, but like for me it was always like the mystery was the driving force, as opposed to like
each underground bunker had its own mystery to solve. Didn't it? Like, oh, where did it come from in the past? What was Horizon Zero Dawn? Was Operation Enduring Victory actually real? Which is a good way of doing it, but I think it would have to be something that Silence is behind from the way that they've set it up, which makes me lean a lot more towards the cyberpunk stuff we've spoken about, where he could be like experimenting on things. He said he had a workshop for experiments that he takes you to, so he could be messing with something that ends up infecting the gameplay.
Yeah, I would like that, because that does link back into the sort of the theme of whether this technology is good or bad, you know what I mean? He's someone who takes it too far and obviously shows you the negative side of it, if that's what happens. And then you have like the counterbalance, which is, I guess, Aloy, who can integrate it more seamlessly to help humanity. I think that sort of is a natural next step, you'd assume. I think that he does need to be involved.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Yeah, probably. I'm always curious how much they planned out ahead of time, because they are so confident in answering so much stuff in the first game. It's like, did they have like a trilogy planned out? Did they like see this as like their next kill zone? Are they going to do like X number of installments? Like, you know, I kind of wonder how much they're holding back.
What I wonder is whether, obviously, like you said, they were known for Killzone beforehand, and this was their first big RPG third-person action game. And it does feel like they've had these ideas forever, and they've gone, look, we might get one shot at this. Let's just put everything in there and make it as good as it can be. And that made for one of the best games, but then I don't think anyone could have guessed how successful it was going to be. I think it was always going to be big, but I remember when the sales and stuff were being reported at the time, and it was genuinely like massive, and it just showed that people were ravenous for it. But I do wonder if it's a case of they over-egged the pudding because they might not have got another shot, and now you might have got kicked back to Killzone.
That's why it's taken so long. Like, I mean, maybe we've barely seen any word of it. I know it's in development, but it's like 3 years now, and there's not a logo drop. There's not Sony saying, hey, look forward to more Horizon. Like, I don't think the credits ends with like check in next time, even though we know there is like more coming.
It's just a bit of the silent stuff, I'm pretty sure, or the silent stuff is at the end anyway. And the actual credits themselves are just going through a cauldron. It's just looking at different cauldron things. There's no like little hints to be gleaned from there. Maybe Aloy will make her own cauldron. That's going to be the next game.
That'd be kind of cool. Let's talk about combat stuff. Like, what did you guys think of the gameplay overall? Did you tire of it over time? Was it perfectly paced? You're shaking your head, JB.
I spent a solid week.
It was a chef's kiss.
Chef's kiss. I chef's kissed. I spent a solid week with Horizon Zero Dawn, just absolutely hammering it. So. And I loved how reactive it was. It's the only game where, you know, when you get those sort of trials or those challenges that are side missions, I wanted to do them all because every single new scenario it threw at me was so dynamic and so interesting. I remember the first time I herded a bunch of the bigger, sort of more cattle-like robots into a little trap I'd set up, and they all went tumbling down.
Yes.
I thought, this might be the best gaming moment of my life. I don't think it gets any better than this. And the fact that I still think about that more than the plot all these years later is something special, I think. And I do think they had just such a robust and interesting set of mechanics and weapons, in the way, like, all action games, I'm gushing over it now, games like this like to say that they have this, you know, responsive world, they have this ecosystem that doesn't matter if you're not there, it's going to work. And one of the only times, ironically considering they're robots, it's properly felt alive for me was Horizon Zero Dawn. I felt like they all had their own individual behaviors, and it was like I was battling these distinct wild animals and having to play on their terms rather than them playing on my terms. I just want to see that hopefully expanded upon with new and more interesting creatures this time around.
I can't remember whether, because you can take control of some of the animals and make them fight each other, but I don't think they fight each other naturally, quote unquote, naturally.
No, it's only if you use like corruption arrows, or if you override them with your big stick.
Because I wonder because you could explain it away as being like, well, it was AI driven, so they don't design creatures that then fight each other because they're trying to live in harmony until Hades comes along and wipes everything out again. But at the same time, like, building on what you said, Josh, like, you could have like an entire ecosystem of, like, you know, like a stormbird comes down and plucks a rhino rapturous thing off the ground and flies away with that. Like, I would love to see those things, kind of like Skyrim stuff.
Yeah, maybe that could be like an interesting angle, actually, because like you said there, in the first game, they are designed to just kind of keep the earth like ticking away, keep keep the environment like, you know, thriving. They're not programmed to attack humans or other animals. Mm-hmm. But what if in the sequel they sort of got their own, you know, sentience? What if they became more than just a program and they suddenly knew that they were not alive? Well, alive, I suppose, but individual creatures, and then they could, you know, have their own little ecosystem when they're battling.
If you're
going to
take something from
stuff.
Far Cry, like, yeah, if you, yeah. Like, I can't think of the rest of the names of the different creatures other than you mentioned Stormbird before we came in. But
Stormbird,
like,
Thunderjaw, Grazer.
Thunderjaw's like the T-Rex type thing. Yeah, like if you could unleash them on like a whole, like, you know, bandit camp of random bandits, then I would take stuff like that.
You can override all the ones. Mm-hmm. I think Thunderjaw's the only ones, if I remember rightly, Thunderjaw's the only ones that were made for humans to hunt, because they started like adapting the terraforming systems as in all the creatures, because humans were hunting them for the parts and stuff, so had to start defending themselves. Right. And then because they wanted big game and stuff, guy was like, here, have a Thunderjaw. I could have pulled that out my ass, but I
that sounds like it makes sense,
I think that's what they were. So if Gaia evolves and sees how civilization is forming and responding more to that and making more machines that people can like mess with and fight and all that sort of thing, it could be that she releases a whole new wave of creatures that do attack everything, like not just defend themselves against humans, but just start like...
Because you remember what happened last time.
Yeah, like just start absolutely ravaging each other.
And I like that, because it's not necessarily... It doesn't make those robots, animals, like evil or anything. It's just that humans are now more confident and take them on because they understand them more. So in response to that, you need to let them defend themselves.
Yeah, and if anything, it's a bigger comment on humanity. We're the ones who went out there and broke everything. And it's like, oh yeah, we took all the parts. It's like, if you just left this alone, it'd be totally fine.
Exactly,
like,
yeah.
Once again, humanity's the blot on the landscape. Ash, what do you think of the gameplay over time?
Oh, I thought that like the combat and the gameplay and everything was perfect. The only thing that I found is that I was absolutely OP with the sling, because you it's just throwing the bombs, and I would just like load up on Blaze, like throw a load of blast bombs and just be like, huh, suck it, guys. I had to like censor myself in the middle of that. But yeah, that was the only like thing I had with it. But the hunting grounds were perfect. There were perfect amount of challenge. They made you use every weapon you had. The secret like tutorial missions that you have to like search through the objectives for to then do the tutorials for were really good and should be part of the main thing. Like when you get a new weapon, you have to do the tutorial for it, because there were like little challenges in themselves. But the hunting ground's perfect. The DLC hunting ground was the best one of all of them, like purely because it was so hard. There was it was like an extra challenge by a side quest where she comes down and it's like, oh hey, you're going to do this with the amount of arrows I give you and the types I give you. So you have to do it with like a bunch of normal arrows, 5 fire arrows and a couple more. And then fight like 6 waves of machines. And it took me hours like to get the 3 suns, whatever they're called in the Banuk territories for it. But yeah, I'd like to see more of that for expanding on weapon sets and different things you can do with them. But I think they got it bang on. Combat was perfect. Gameplay was perfect. The only problem I had with Horizon Zero Dawn, actually, the one criticism I have, is a little bit to do with the world building. Because
I thought go on.
The world building, as in the actual environment, perfect, and the cultures and societies, great. But the one thing I found a problem with was that it was supposed to be set up as this massive matriarchy with all the women in power and these like literally matriarchs that run over these villages.
That's why Aloy gets cast out at the beginning. Oh, yeah, I've got a mum, so blah.
Exactly. So mothers are the all-powerful force in this world, yet it's still...
They're so not.
They're exactly. Men are still saying sassy things to Aloy everywhere. Like, there's one bit where I walked past a fella at the end of the game, and if you do all of the Sunhawk stuff and get your hawk to become the Sunhawk of the Lodge... when you do all of the hunting lodge stuff, it's a woman that takes over. And I was walking around at the end, and it was like the idle NPC chatter. And one guy said to the other, turned to it, "Oh yeah, that woman's head of the hunting lodge now because all of her male family died. Oh, what an idiot!" And I was like, "Excuse me, supposed to be this all empowering game for women and women in control and matriarchy and all this sort of thing, and it's supposed to be the world starting again, and it's still a patriarchy with like horrible little comments coming out. It just should have been absolutely either level playing field or committed to the Matrix.
Is that not another great comment on humanity, that even though that happens, it could swing back around?
Is that not what they're trying to do? Because they make it so that Aloy's tribe at the beginning, like, they're the ones who, like, they cast her out because she hasn't got a mum, and that's the whole thing. That's my favourite scene in the game, is the bit when they start praising her because they realise that she does have a mum, and the whole I'm not your anointed scene is, like, my favourite thing. But yeah, I wonder how much, like, that's meant to be intentional.
Oh, no, it's really annoying. It's just incredibly annoying. You get in so many, obviously, speaking as a female gamer, you get in so many games where it's like, oh, a woman can do, how impressive, a woman, wow. And then, like, whereas for men, it's like a power fantasy, it's whatever, it's the same. So for it to happen in this, which was such a female-fronted game, which had so many women in different roles that were empowered, doing powerful things, but then coming with a caveat of, oh, I became the master of my, like an Oseram woman saying, oh, I became the master of my own forge because if I stayed in the Oseram lands, I would have been a forge wife. And I was like,
Why?
Like,
so close game, you know what I mean?
There's no need. That's the one thing that ruined it for me, like, as in, it didn't ruin the game. I had a great time with the game. The thing is, you have to excuse it because it happens so often with things, like, where it's just like, okay, this is the norm. Let's paste it over this fantasy world we've made. It's just me going on about it. Like,
no, but that's a really good point, though, in terms of the thing that they make a big deal out of that. One of the first choices you make is in response to bullies because of that, because you don't have a mum. So it's like, if you're going to set this world up in that way, then you could address it more naturally. I mean, it's like kind of coming up with an entirely unique context to address it, but then they don't really do much with that. Yeah, that'd be a really good thing to put into the next one. What do you guys think in terms of location stuff? You mentioned location change before. Do you think they should just change it altogether, or is there more you can do with this world? Like, for me, this specific location?
For me, I'd change the location. I feel like we've spent enough time in there. I would just go somewhere else. I don't know where I'd like to go. I don't know whether I want to go somewhere
Japan.
Where... Maybe. Let's go overseas. There's no reason why we can't go overseas.
Street Fighter 2 did it. Do it.
Exactly.
That's all you need.
We could do that, Scott. I don't know. Would you guys want to see somewhere like that's identifiable, where you look at the landscape and think, oh, I kind of know what that's supposed to be? Or would you want something entirely new?
I don't want that because not knowing. Like, that's the best thing for me.
Yeah.
I like seeing how different the world was, like, after the whole apocalypse, basically. Like, and figuring out it was Las Vegas was such a neat little part of it. Or getting the coordinates and being able to look that up, I thought that was such a neat little part of it. And then reaffirming it with the DLC with the Hoover Dam is cool because you already know, but I wouldn't want that to begin with to go, oh, okay, we're here. But-
I
like the idea of, like, seeing, like, certain, like, geographical things, like, yeah, like noticing, like, oh, this giant valley used to be like the Hoover Dam or something, and be like, okay,
I keep saying that. I think it is, it's a big dam,
it's like that next to Las Vegas. Why not? We don't live in America.
I'm very sorry if my location is off completely.
Same. I don't know anything about geography. Barely knew where Wales was until a few years ago, so not to worry. But in regards to you're going so far into the future that I like the idea that you can still play rock formations. Like, if you went to somewhere, the Giant's Causeway or something, which I think is in Ireland, again, geography, don't know. But if they had, like, random things like that, who knows? We're all shrugging shoulders. But if they did something like that, you could at least go, okay, that's that place, I must be here, as opposed to this is a broken down version of, like, the Sydney Opera House or something like that. I would rather they did things that played into Earth, like, and played into the way that, like, you know, like the Earth's been left kind of thing. But yeah, I think they need to do more with the location overall. I don't think you could just repeat the same thing, even though a lot of games do for the sake of turnaround.
I'm having some kind of thought, and it might just be completely wrong and broken and not even make sense. But obviously, like
Hoover
you said...
Hoover Dam's next to Las Vegas, mate.
I'm literally... Is it?
It is, because it's in Fallout New Vegas. There's the Hoover Dam
there.
So it's got to be in there, man. That's the only... how I know geography.
I learned geography from Metal Gear Solid 1 when Liquid Snake is like, is this thing in Lopnor, China? And I was like, well, Lopnor must be in China.
There you go.
He says something else about somewhere being in Russia. Anyway, you were going
to
make a point.
I can't remember, but I have something to add to that. Used to watch Supernatural, the two Winchester brothers were from, I've forgotten it, Lawrence, Kansas. And when I used to make wrestlers in WWE games, I used to always put them from Lawrence, Kansas. Anyway, what was I saying? Okay,
Detroit, Michigan.
Yes, that's it. Detroit, Michigan. Genuinely same. Anyway, what's this podcast about?
Horizon Zero Dawn 2. You were going to say something that started with the Hoover Dam, but it's not there anymore.
I don't think it is the Hoover. I've gotten so stressed by this. I don't think it's Hoover. I think it's just a dam. I think it's a dam. And
I thought it was like
associated it.
It's not the Great Valley.
It's
is that what it's called?
It's called Catch in the Frozen Wilds.
What's that big one called that everyone goes to? That's the big valley.
The Grand Canyon.
Grand Canyon. The Great
Grand
Valley. That's what Rockstar would call it.
Not the same as the Hoover Dam.
No, but it's a big valley, and I think that thing's next to LA. LV. at this point. We're not going to edit this podcast, so you know, we'll just put it all up.
This is all caught up.
Someone will come find us on Twitter and let us know.
Yeah, shout
what
us.
Landmarks
please.
On next.
Tell us what Greycatch is. I've just decided it's Hoover Dam.
Anyway, we might as well end on a very quick roundup of some little wish list features that we put together before we came in. One thing was the idea of riding way more creatures. Yes. They let you ride like their sort of horse adjacent things. But I want to get, I mean, you mentioned a Stormbird. I definitely want to get Aerial. Like, I think that would be a really cool way to get around.
I'd love to fly on a Stormbird. No, I think being able to ride things, I really wanted to ride a Thunderjaw like the whole way through or get on the back of a the sneaky ones with the big
tails.
The one
that goes invisible.
Yes.
Yes.
Like, oh my God, the names. Oh, like, I want to say Splicer. It's not a Splicer.
It's Panther.
No, it begins with an S, but the sneaky
Electric
tail
Panther.
Boys.
That's it. That's, yeah, the,
that's the one.
Exactly. I'd love to be able to ride one of them because they'll obviously go invisible and sneak around and that sort of thing. So that would be really good.
Cool. You mentioned before, Josh, about like hybrid stuff as well. Do you think like if they just did, if they made a point of, because the whole, one of the other cruxes to the combat is like figure out how to take these things down, shoot this specific part on the body or whatever and take something down like step by step. If they hybridized it, at least that would shake the combat up a bit.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe like if maybe in combat mutations, you know, something starts to change, then you need to switch up your approach and you use different arrows and you use different weapons. I think that would be quite cool because I do think that for as good as the combat was, by the end of the first game, you had a mastery over most of the most of the environment, most of the enemies, and you sort of knew how to deal with them. And I think you need to recapture that sort of sense of mystery and unknown of, I don't know what this thing is. I don't know how to take it down. And then you eventually, you know, you start to, you know, dominate, conquer the landscape.
Yeah, because like with the combat, I think it was like pristine, but I could see every game they were pulling from. It was like, it's the Tomb Raider bow and arrow combat, it's the Hitman or the Assassin's Creed, like the vision mode to see what you need to aim at. It was like, well, the Hitman style, you know, you're going to see the pathway something's going to take, so you know where you need to wait. It's the tall grass from Assassin's Creed. It was like, okay, I see everything you've pulled from, but like, I want an original mechanic that you can call your own and go, okay, Horizon pioneered this thing. And so like, for me, it's like, either that comes through the way that you tackle monsters, maybe you have to break them down in a specific way. Because I love at some point you fight one of the bigger ones and you can tear like a cannon off it and then like use that on something else, and I was like, okay, start comboing these things together, like make me think that way.
Well, this was it. By the time I got to the end game, I felt a bit too overpowered because I was using the same tactics over and over again in a way that I wasn't before. Like you mentioned the cannon, that's all I used towards the end, man.
So
I would
fun.
Rip that cannon off, blow everyone away, and then I'd be more or less done in it. Nothing really posed a challenge. And that's not because I'm really good at the game, it's just because the game gives you all these tools by the end of it.
I mean, I think it works in regards to like at that point you've played for enough time that when you come across that thing that you're more confident to take it down, and you realize that you can use some part of one of those creatures against the rest of them. But I like the idea of that combat chess kind of feel becoming more of the combat overall rather than just like you said with the blast, the
slings, like,
using
the
tear arrows or
the
whatever.
The shield weaver armor as well, when you find it from that bunker, if you go running around with that on, that, there's just nothing stands a chance. Like, it worked in the DLC because they kind of counteracted it for if you were really OP, but in the actual main line game, like, I've defeated Hades first go, whereas I heard that loads of other people had massive problem with it, whereas like I did everything in the game, had the like armor on, had like 5,000 blades, and no, it took a while still, but I was like, oh no, that, like, I feel like this is too much.
Oh god, I got stuck in that thing for like 3 hours because I ran out of all ammo, so I had nothing. I was just sitting there going like, well, my save point is here with no ammo, and I'm just sat here going like, cool, I'll guess I'll melee him to death like eventually. But yeah, those are our sort of general thoughts on what they could do for the next Horizon game. But let's what you think down. No, I keep saying down across on YouTube, or not even there, on Twitter. It's not even a video podcast anymore. Again, we're not editing it. Come find us on social media and let us know what you think. Also, where the
Hoover Dam is. Where is the Hoover
Dam?
It's not in Greycatch in the Frozen World, so please forgive me.
Until then, though, this has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast, and I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
And Ash Millman.
Please don't shout at me about the Hoover Dam. Goodbye.
I mean, I'm going to. Bye, though.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays.
Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.